here, here. So who do you have this side? Is Gretchen close? Is she here?
Yes.
She's here. Oh, there she is. You want to come up and tell us why we need this stuff? Don't take so long because I have another meeting at 3:30.
I'm sorry. We have a short testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Durfler, members of the Senate Public Affairs Committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Close, State Representative, District 36. Senate Bill 1330, if passed, will create the crime of partial birth infanticide. Very basically, the bill will outlaw a procedure that involves the killing of a human infant in the process of birth. In partial birth infanticide, the child is delivered in the breech position, feet first. There is a stab incision to the baby's skull, generally with scissors. Then a suction tube is inserted and the baby's brains are sucked out, causing death. I apologize for the graphic nature of this testimony. You may wonder if this procedure is performed in Oregon and how often. We cannot be certain because state reporting forms do not list the procedure. We do know there are at least 2,500 late-term or third-trimester abortions as of June 7, 1996, according to the State and Journal, or 7 per day minimum. Our purpose is to prohibit this procedure entirely. Nationwide, there are 3,000 to 5,000 infanticide procedures performed a year that are publicly admitted to. Currently, 8 states have partial birth abortion infanticide bans in effect. In 17 other states, bans are blocked by state or federal courts. The bill defines the procedure. Section 1 provides a Class A felony charge. In Section 2, allows for an exemption to save the life of the mother. The bill does not apply to termination of the life of the fetus prior to birth, only in the process of birth. And I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for coming.
Al, question?
Question, go ahead.
How in the world could the life of the mother be endangered when the infant is fully delivered? Except for the head.
Senator Durfler and Senator Starr, I believe when there was testimony given at the national level, that was the question, that this almost never occurred. They did have people come forward who said that it did occur and later recounted that, saying that they had lied. So there is some dispute.
May I ask that for a while? The doctor said there are sometimes a legislator or a congressman asked the same question. The next day he came back, the doctor, and said, I need to be truthful about this. There is no time, because it's not the head, it's just 2 inches of the head. And there is no time, but I just thought we'd leave it in the bill, because in case it was, you know, that.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We have Dr. Richard Stern, Phil Andrew, and Mike Cowden. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Before I begin, can I ask how much time do I have? So
you need to identify yourself first, and then after that, we'd like to finish up about 3:30. So I have another meeting at 6:30.
Okay. And more witnesses do you have?
We have one after this meeting.
And focus, we have no
problem. We have another phone next sheet.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't think anyone on this committee hasn't been fully persuaded. Omega 3. I believe that we are one persuasion or other, and we're going to. I know that you're passionate about this, and I am also, but
Gene is right in that he's going to be out of here. And
but you can continue the committee if you want. I mean,
okay. Well, I'll be glad to continue the discussion as that goes.
Right. Yes, he has to leave the rest of us.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Richard M. Thorne. I'm a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist who now specializes in the area of fertility. During my training at USC LA County Medical Center for 5 years, the definition has already been described to you as far as what partial birth abortion means. I'm here to bring up some salient points because there has been an avalanche of miscommunication as far as what words mean medically to the lay people. There has been outright lies from the President of the United States on this and other people. And so there is much confusion that has also been percolated by the media over the last 5 years. So if I can clarify anybody's thoughts on words, that's my purpose. A partial birth abortion is most commonly performed in the 5th or 6th month of pregnancy. There is problems with definition of what is the difference between a live birth and full term. And full term refers to any delivery after the 37th week of pregnancy. And it has nothing to do with live birth. Legal definition of live birth is if an infant is delivered after the 20th week of pregnancy, has some signs of life, which may be a gasping respiration or some voluntary movement. That is considered by a legal term as a live birth. So I think we first of all have to define the difference between live birth and full term. The majority of these patients, contrary to media, do not have any significant medical problems. 80% are elective. It takes approximately 3 days to accomplish. The latter part is, has been described as far as the technique. There is no record of these procedures defined or explained in any medical text, journal, or online medical service. There is no known quality assurance, credentialing, or other standard assessments usually associated with any, quote, newly described surgical procedure. Neither the CDC or Alan Guttmacher Institute have any data on partial birth abortion and certainly no basis upon which to claim that it is, quote, safer or even a preferred procedure. The bigger questions therefore remain is why or why whatever would you want to have a partial birth abortion? Since there has always been safer techniques than partial birth abortion to get the same result. The only possible advantage of partial birth abortion is that it guarantees a dead baby at the time of delivery. In no way does it spare a mother from complications. In no way does it render her infertile or her body torn to shreds, as President Clinton has stated in public testimony. That is false. All you have to do if you have a deformed child or a mother who has a problem is separate the child from the mother. You don't necessarily have to kill it in doing so. The 5 cases that surrounded President Clinton at his press conference under close scrutiny do not justify partial birth abortion. One woman had a trisomy, an extra chromosome, in her fetus. Another one's fetus had water on the brain, so-called hydrocephaly. Another had polyhydramnia, too much fluid around the baby inside the womb. And another one had stiffened baby syndrome. So in no way did any of those conditions threaten the life of the mother if partial birth abortion had been performed or not performed. That's bold-faced lie. Ellen Goodman and other so-called medical experts have stated that the fetus feels no pain. I'm here to testify in my document in front of you that people who study neuropathophysiology in the newborn and fetus have said that the fetus at 20 weeks, in contrary to what the media believes or what Ellen Goodman believes or other so-called experts, the fetus at 20 weeks feels more pain than a full-term infant. It feels more pain because, number one, it's shorter. There's less distance from its skin to its brain. Number two, the modulation neurotransmitters that are present in a full term to modulate or decrease pain are not present in a 20-week fetus. The neuroreceptors that perceive pain are peaked or at its highest at a 20-week fetus. And for that reason, for Ellen Goodman or any of her so-called cast of supporting cast to state that the fetus feels no pain, is already dead, is a bold-faced lie. It goes beyond non-truth. It is a lie. Where I'm really concerned about is right now, in the states that have passed partial birth abortion, a lot of those states, there's a ban on that. And the reason why is that the judges or the judiciary cannot come up with a definition of what is infanticide. What is the difference between mangling and taking a child piece by piece apart with a DNE and a DNX, or so-called partial birth abortion? And until we come to a summary, if for no other reason, we as a republic need to define what is infanticide, we will have a gray zone which will continue, where we will therefore have a legitimate reason in the courts to even include abortion into spilling over into definite infanticide. In summary, as an obstetrician and gynecologist, I find that even to debate about this procedure, the misinformation by the media, the perpetual deceit by the President of the United States and by the opponents upon any restriction on abortion rights to be foundless. We're not here to decrease abortion. We're here to decrease infanticide. In this past year alone in Oregon, we have had 10 infants murdered by their parents or mother for various social reasons. The yuppie couple, Amy Grossberg and Brian Peterson, among the prom queen, Melissa Drexler, who literally trash their infants, are given token sentences of 20 to 30 months. The basic legal precept is, if there is no intrinsic value to human life unless wanted and desired by the mother to be or not to be pregnant. Meanwhile, in Wisconsin, a 37-year-old man gets 12 years for killing cats. A father who did not want to pay child support injects his son of 11 months of age with HIV virus. And recently in the state of Washington, a mother left her child under the care of her boyfriend, who allegedly said the child drowned in the bathtub while he was at a pub drinking beer. When discovered, they put their child in a trash can and burned it in the park. The district attorney is having a hard time trying to find out what law was broken, if law was broken, since there are no remains to refute. What is the truth and what is not the truth? An international bioethicist, Peter Singer, who favors infanticide, blatantly favors infanticide. If a child has defects or who is not wanted, has written that an animal has more rights than a disabled child, and yet he is given the prestigious chair of bioethics at Princeton University this past year. 28 states have passed a ban on partial birth abortion, yet 17 are enjoined because the judges can't make a decision what's infanticide. It is time to put a stop to the blurring of lines of potential infanticide. We need to help to support a partial birth abortion ban, which would, in its essence, awaken society from its trip towards the inevitable infanticide belief. Thank you for your patience and attention.
My name is Gail Atterbury. Thank you for letting me testify today. I'm the director and lobbyist for Oregon Right to Life. I do have my written testimony. I will not go through it all, but I would like to touch on a few highlights. As it's been mentioned, partial birth abortion procedure starts at 20 weeks into the pregnancy, most commonly done to the 20th to 30th week, and it is legal up to the 40th week, though. The partial birth abortion ban has been debated extensively in Congress, with both houses declaring this procedure to be inhumane and inconsistent with our compassionate society. Two times, both houses of Congress passed a ban on partial birth abortion in March of 96 and May 97. Two times, President Clinton vetoed the ban. The House was successful in overriding his veto twice. The Senate fell short just by 3 votes, I'll be the last time of the 2/3 needed. I'm just going to highlight just a couple of things of the of some of the vast amount of testimonies you can imagine that was submitted to the Congress during this time. One I think is very, very important, and that was by Brenda Pratt Schaefer, who was a registered nurse for 13 years. She was assigned to a nursing, by her nursing agency to an abortion clinic in September of 93. She considered herself very pro-choice, so she didn't have a problem with this assignment. She was wrong and subsequently appeared before both houses of Congress to testify what she had seen and why she had left and actually became pro-life after that. These are her quotes. "I stood at the doctor's side and watched him perform a partial birth abortion on a woman who was 6 months pregnant. The baby's heartbeat was clearly visible on the ultrasound screen. The doctor delivered the baby's body and arms, everything but his little head. The baby's body was moving. His little fingers were clasping together. He was kicking his feet. The doctor took a pair of scissors and inserted them into the back of the baby's head, and the baby's arms jerked out in a flinch, like a startled reaction, like a baby does when he thinks he might fall. Then the doctor opened the scissors up. He stuck the high-powered suction tube into the hole and sucked the baby's brains out. Now the baby was limp. The American Medical Association endorsed the federal partial birth abortion ban. In a letter, they said, thank you for the opportunity to work with you. That is talking to Senator Senatorian. Restricting a procedure we all agree is not good medicine. The director of the National Coalition of Abortion Providers, Ron Fitzsimmons, admitted in a 1997 March article in AMA News that he lied through his teeth when he said the procedure was used rarely and only on women whose lives were in danger or whose fetuses were damaged. He said the procedure is performed far more often than his colleagues have acknowledged in unhealthy women bearing healthy fetuses. And just one example, the only one I'll quote here, is an investigative reporter for a New Jersey newspaper, The Record, in one of her articles, said that at one abortion clinic in New Jersey admitted to doing over 1,500 partial birth abortions a year in their one clinic. So this is not a rare and unknown procedure. Former Surgeon General Coop, with a number of over 500 physician specialists, has issued numerous statements, and some of them are in your packet, about the fact that this is never a medically needed procedure. And we have many of the credentials of the physicians listed in this testimony. Currently, approximately 33 states have passed bans on the partial birth abortion procedure. The majority of these bans are being held up in court. Some have been declared unconstitutional. 7 are currently in effect. And I would like to say that just about 2 weeks ago, a federal judge in Wisconsin ruled the Wisconsin partial birth abortion constitutional, and they are that one now is operating. It is not known whether partial birth abortions are being performed in Oregon. According to the 1997 Oregon Department of Health vital stats, and you have a copy of that in the back of my testimony, there were 252 abortions performed at or after 21 weeks. This is the time during which partial birth abortions are being done. Can be done. It's the time that they're done, if they're done. Under the vital stats report, which details methods, there is no category listed as partial birth abortion. However, there are 2 abortions listed under other. If partial birth abortions are not being done in Oregon, we can be very glad. As we can plainly hear from the experts, partial birth abortions are not necessary. Our own census tell us that this procedure is cruel. We can take this opportunity in this bill to ensure that this procedure does not start in Oregon, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Howden. I'm with the Oregon Physicians Resource Council. I'm not a physician myself, but representing them here this afternoon. Wanted to testify in support of the bill and just speak to a few points about the question. First, in our mind, the procedure itself defies the ethical treatment of a child. As has already been alluded to here and described, We're talking about a condition where a child is actually in the palm of the hand of a physician at the moment the procedure is actually in its final stages of completion. And that in itself would defy the other natural existence of not having the child visible at that point in other abortion procedures. Makes it extremely different in that regard. Except for the skull, every element and part is visible to document the fact that this actually is a living human being. The profound question that many of our physicians have is how can all the biological and medical evidence be so apparent at that moment and still be there any question about the viability of this child? Second, while protecting the life or health of the mother is claimed as the chief goal for performing the procedure, the facts betray this reason. Some mothers sincerely believe this to be true while not knowing of the medical consensus that exists on the question. In fact, AMA President Daniel H. Johnson said in a New York Times article in May of 1997, the partial delivery of a living fetus for the purpose of killing it outside the womb is ethically offensive to most Americans and physicians. Our panel could not find any identified circumstances in which the procedure was the only safe and effective abortion method. And Dr. Martin Haskell, an abortionist who has performed more than 1,000 partial birth abortions, said, about 80% are done for purely elective reasons. The other 20% are done for genetic reasons, which includes such non-life-threatening conditions as having a cleft palate or Down syndrome. And I have to note here, just as a side, that right now I have an 8-year-old nephew who plays baseball in South Salem who was born with one of the most dramatic cleft palate conditions possible, and is just quite an incomparable youngster, an incredible young life who is actually an encouragement to his whole family as well as his brothers. Dr. Haskell's paper, which I've included in the back of my testimony with you there today, on second trimester abortions using this procedure, in it he talks of delivering the lower extremities, the torso, and the upper extremities, and afterwards holding the child in his hand while performing the remainder of the procedure as you've heard described already. He states further that he does it in the third trimester and knows of other physicians who perform this procedure as well. According to Pamela Smith, the Director of Medical Education in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Mount Sinai Hospital in Chicago, there are absolutely no obstetrical situations encountered in this country which require a partially delivered human fetus to be destroyed to preserve the health of the mother. Then third, the claims that anesthesia received by the mother for pain kills the baby is false. Dr. David Bernbach, Director of Obstetric Anesthesiology at St. Luke's Hospital in New York, said, every day we have pregnant patients who get anesthesia. Women who break their ankles, need knee surgery, have appendectomies, gallbladder removals, breast biopsies, and so on. Anesthetics done safely by an anesthesiologist do not do harm to either the mother or the baby. And concerning the question of whether or not the underdeveloped fetus feels pain, Professor Robert White, Director of the Division of Neurosurgery and Brain Research Laboratory at Case Western Reserve School of Medicine in Cleveland, testified before Congress that the fetus within this time frame of gestation, 20 weeks and beyond, is fully capable of experiencing pain. Without a doubt, this is a dreadfully painful experience for any such infant subjected to such a surgical procedure. It should also be noted that in the paper there by Dr. Haskell, he also notes that the local anesthesia he administers would neither kill nor prevent pain in the fetus. Dr. Joseph L. DeCook, an OBGYN with over 30 years of experience, testified in congressional hearings as well that partial birth abortion is a dangerous procedure for women to undergo, and I've listed in my testimony the issues that makes it dangerous in that way. Even Dr. Warren Hearn, late-term abortion provider and author of the nation's most widely used textbook on late-term abortions, said of the partial birth abortion procedure, you really can't defend it. I would dispute any statement that this is the safest procedure to use. We know from the experience of Ron Fitzsimmons of the National Coalition of Abortion Providers in 1997 that the numbers can be very underrepresented as they were in the state of New Jersey. According to the New York Times article in February of 1997, he says the procedure is performed far more often than his colleagues have acknowledged and on healthy women bearing healthy fetuses. In fact, far and away, the majority of Oregonians find this kind of procedure unacceptable. If it is not occurring in Oregon now, then there is no fear of the effects of the law. If it is occurring, then we should be doing what we can to prevent the tragic procedure from happening. We urge you to vote in favor of this bill for the benefit of all women, even for those whose life hangs in the very palm of a physician's hand. Thank you for your time and your energy on this issue.
Okay. I hope that we have one to testify, Lois. Okay, and I'd like to call you back after she is finished. So, if you... Okay, is there another sign-up sheet? Or is there someone else who wants to? No. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Lois Backus, and I am the Executive Director of Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette. But today I'm here speaking for Planned Parenthood Affiliates of Oregon, which is a statewide coalition of Planned Parenthood affiliates with 9 clinics statewide serving over 30,000 patients with family planning, counseling, and education services every year. Planned Parenthood opposes Senate Bill 1330. We believe that good public policy on health care is that which leaves decisions regarding specific procedures in the hands of the experts. Physicians, in consultation with their patients, and not legislators, should be deciding which medical procedures are appropriate and which are not. Banning specific abortion procedures is an unprecedented political intrusion into medical practice. We need to leave these deeply personal decisions in the hands of women, their families, in consultation with their clergy, if they wish, and with their physicians. So-called partial birth abortion, again, a term which is not an official medical term, these bans are promoted by those whose interests are political, not the interests of women's health. Planned Parenthood feels very strongly that women's health is best served by good public policy regarding health care in general, and not the targeting of specific procedures. We work every day to prevent the need for abortion in thousands of women in Oregon and across the country. Almost 50% of the pregnancies in this country are unplanned or mistimed, and we are working as hard as we can to limit those numbers, to bring unplanned pregnancies down to zero. If we are able to do that, and if we have your support in doing that, then there will be no need for abortions of any kind. I'm here today to plead with you to oppose Senate Bill 1330 and to join with us in doing everything possible to establish good public policy in favor of preventing unplanned and unwanted pregnancies. Planned Parenthood Affiliates of Oregon urges you to reject playing politics with women's lives. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Well, I have some questions.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay. You mentioned about supporting Planned Parenthood, Mr. Effis. Do you know about how many hundreds of thousands of public dollars you already received in what you're doing?
Oh, yes, I know very well. Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette is a direct grantee of the federal government for our America's Family Planning Program, and we comply with all of the regulations of that program in order to provide free family planning services to women in financial need throughout Multnomah County.
Will you answer my question?
Yeah, and it was?
How much support dollars do you receive already from the public, our taxpayers?
Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette has 7 clinics, and we serve nearly 20,000 patients, and our family planning, federally subsidized family planning program is roughly $300,000 of a $4 million budget.
Okay.
lot of public support, wouldn't you say?
It's a lot of public support for nearly 10,000 patients served under that program.
Not counting the ones that are destroyed in the womb. Are you aware that Roe v. Wade does not protect the destruction of an infant in the process of birth?
Would you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Are you aware that Roe v. Wade, you know Roe v. Wade?
Yes, I am.
That's the Supreme Court decision that found a constitutional protection for abortion on demand up till the day of delivery, the moment of delivery. And in that rule, it did not protect the destruction of an infant in the process of birth. It's not an abortion when the baby's... And that's why you keep saying partial birth abortion. Read the bill.
The
bill is about partial birth infanticide, the destruction of a baby in the process of birth.
Well, with all due respect, the previous people that testified consistently referred to this as abortion and not infanticide. So I'm frankly confused about what the committee's intention is. However, I would disagree with you regarding Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade is very clear in stating that after viability can be established, the state does have an interest in protecting the health and well-being of the fetus.
I don't know if you've read the Supreme Court decision, because I wanted
yes, to... Yes, I have.
I wanted to introduce some other senators tonight, no third trimester abortions, and the most we can do, upheld by the Supreme Court after Roe v. Wade, is that a doctor be required to be there in case the baby should survive. And some states have tried to regulate third-term abortion in hospitals, and they've been struck down. No state can outlaw what you call viable destruction in the womb.
Well, I absolutely will disagree with you on that, because I have been in Oregon for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was previously the executive director of a Planned Parenthood affiliate in Pennsylvania, where any abortion after 24 weeks is banned. And it has been upheld by the U.S. Constitution.
Well, then I must have wrong legal advice. I can go forward with the third trimester banning.
According to the decision in Roe versus Wade, provided the language is consistent with those laws across the country that have been upheld,
of course,
then Roe versus Wade does support that.
The other thing,
and I would add, Planned Parenthood has never differed from the guidelines as laid down in Roe versus Wade.
So you don't do them past the... Right.
Roe versus Wade is very clear on saying that in post-viability abortions...
What's that?
In Roe versus Wade, viability was identified as roughly 26 weeks.
Okay.
As I told you already, the law in Pennsylvania is 24 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That is up to question. However, it is clear that at any time, a state may not ban abortions if they are necessary to preserve the life or health of the mother.
Mental health.
All Roe versus Wade says is health. And that is the position that Planned Parenthood takes on any legislation regarding the banning of any abortions.
So in Pennsylvania, if a person comes in at 30 weeks and they say, I'm going to go crazy, my mental health is out the window, if I have this baby, would Planned Parenthood provide an illegal abortion?
I would respectfully say that the person you should ask is a legal expert.
So you run the clinic.
Planned Parenthood provides early abortion care up to 12 weeks gestation.
You know, I personally know a woman in Oregon that went to a Planned Parenthood and had the abortion at 20 weeks.
In Oregon? Well, I'm sorry. I run all of the abortion clinics that are Planned Parenthood in Oregon, and that does not happen.
Honey, you just lost your credibility because I know her. All right. My legal counsel, our legal counsel here, just told us, just for anybody listening, Florida, they're, when they ban partial birth, they called it abortion, I call it infanticide, and our bill, that's what we're going to go by no matter what people are saying. This bill that I helped draft is infanticide, just to clear that up in your mind. They didn't add to save the life of the mother, so that's why it was thrown out. And even though there is no history of a baby being delivered except for 2 inches of its head to save the life of a mother, I left that in there because I want this to withstand the court challenge. However, I have no expectation that it will even get past the governor of the state because he's very diffuse. So, but I still think that we need to pass the bill. And how many children do you have?
I have one.
Okay. Does anybody else have questions? Have you ever seen a partial birth infanticide?
Excuse me. I consider that your line of questioning now to be insulting.
No, you're the expert.
We have already had testimony, detailed testimony, from the OMA, for instance, in the House, that as far as we know, there are no such procedures performed in Oregon.
Oh, so you haven't seen that? The reason is because I've never spoken or had a witness that with as much experience in abortion. And I just, this is a real, I will never forget this day. Do you have a question?
Thank you.
Okay, so there's one more, Costagna.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bob Castagna, General Counsel and Executive Director of the Oregon Catholic Conference. I'm here this afternoon to testify in support of the Senate bill. This is a very difficult issue area and subject for society in general. When the Oregon Catholic Conference approaches public policy issues, we do so on a consistent ethic of life basis. And the cornerstone of the Church's approach to public policy issues is the dignity and sanctity of human life. So this session, you have seen the Oregon Catholic Conference involved in a whole host of issue areas. Besides parental notification, besides partial birth, abortion, and infanticide legislation, the Oregon Catholic Conference has been involved in advocacy for affordable housing, in favor of a state earned income tax credit, increasing the percentage and making it refundable, advocacy for farm workers, equity for private schools. The Oregon Catholic Conference approaches the spectrum of public policy issues from natural conception to natural death and everything in between on the basis of a consistent ethic of life. In a practical sense, through Catholic charities, through homes for women in crisis pregnancy centers, the Catholic Church gives evidence of its support both for the interests of women in crisis pregnancy situations as well as for their unborn children. Because this procedure of partial birth abortion, partial birth infanticide, is an unnecessary procedure as well as a hideous procedure in terms of the destruction of a child in the process of being born, the Oregon Catholic Conference must join with those who testify in support of such legislation to ban such procedures from occurring in the future if they are not currently occurring in the state of Oregon. So we join with the sponsors of this bill in asking for the legislature to support the Senate bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this? You don't want to. Okay. Well, then I'm going to close. What was that? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 1330.
And I'll move the dash to amendment, SB 1330.
Thank you. Senator Wild has moved the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 1330. Is there any objection? So ordered.
And would you like me to move SB 1330, the amended report, to pass recommendation?
Yes.
Okay, I shall do.
Okay. Senator Wild has moved Senate Bill 1330 to the floor as amended. Is there any discussion?
With
the due pass. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Wild?
Aye.
Chair Shannon?
Aye. Having received the majority, it is passed, and I will carry it, but that was not to adjourn. I just wanted to say that in our work as legislators, it's always to take into consideration the youth among us. And I can't think of any person more weak that is taken out of the safety of their mother's womb to go into the hands of a should-be loving doctor, to have their neck stabbed without anesthetic and their brain sucked out, all in the name of a woman's right to choose. It's sick. And I'm happy to carry this bill. And I'm happy to try and be a voice for those that don't have a voice. And if there's no further business, it's adjourned.